Hello and welcome to the 106th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast, a spelk in the thumb of the adoption industry. With me...
Industry.
Oh, I've had that conversation this week. Service. With me, Al Cooks.
Who are you?
Yeah, who am I?
And to me, he's Scott Cassandreddy. Well, that was quite the intro, Mr. Coates.
I feel it was a shambles wrapped in a folly.
So what's... Can you tell me what a spelk is? Because we don't call them spelks in Scotland. We call them skelfs.
It's like a pointy bit of wood that gets under your skin. That's a spelk.
Yeah.
That's a northern thing.
Okay. So, well, in Scotland, it's called skelfs.
And if we were from the south, we'd call it a splinter. There you are. See?
Splinter.
This is where our listener comes for quality regional dialect.
And yeah, they do.
Yes. Oh, anyway, how are you, Scott Cassandreddy?
I'm fine, Al Cooks. How are you, Al Cooks?
I am well, thank you. Very well. Actually, I'm absolutely done in with it, with meetings and talk and chit-chat about adoption. So if I'm honest with you, I was quite not looking forward to this tonight.
Oh, really? Oh. Is that why we've talked for the last hour about anything but the podcast?
About the price of chips.
And adoption.
The foibles of our mad lives.
It's not often I have to take a comfort break during the podcast, but I had to take a comfort break before we started recording because we'd chatted for that long that I needed a wee.
It's true. And I went on Twitter, on Periscope to tell everyone that that's what you were off to do.
You're evil. So, and you posted that where exactly?
I have no idea.
Where could it pop up?
I just literally pressed buttons on my phone and things happen. I have no idea. I should get my kids involved.
You should.
Anywho.
No, maybe not, because I've seen your TikToks. It's not a good idea.
Oh, TikToks. I've traumatised several of my children who can't look me in the eye anymore, apparently, after I've done my TikToks. But anyway,
traumatised my children as well, because one of them follows you on TikTok. And,
bless him.
Just sits there giggling and laughing, bless him. Anyway, stay tuned, because we are going to get into the...
Yeah, it's the substance of this podcast, if there is any substance.
Yes. Well, there is.
And I thought it'd be really interesting to follow up on a little bit of conversations that we had last week where we had Sue Armstrong Brown, and she was fantastic. But I got a few messages after that from social worker practitioners, sort of, because I think Sue was fantastic and she was great, and she sort of put quite an interesting perspective on Gavin Williams's comments on social work. And so I thought it'd be good to maybe unpack some of that stuff. Because I've been in a few situations this week where I've sort of bumped into social workers and different people from the sector who've kind of just got in conversation, have said some interesting things about how they feel about that. So I thought it'd be good to reflect on that. But then actually maybe look a bit wider about what actually we're meant to be doing, because I've been involved in conversations around how we do the assessments. Anyway, that feels really boring. That feels like the most dull. We'll see how we go. We'll try and pep it up with a bit of va-va-voom.
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 Yeah. Well, you know, I think I know we talked about it briefly, but it was kind of one of those heads in hand moment where you do a face palm and you go, seriously, man.
Yeah,
I mean, I get why he was. I mean, you know, he had what, 10 minutes, 5 minutes? I can't remember how long it was.
It was 25 minutes. He was on. There was an interview, wasn't there, that he did, or a speech?
But there was a Q&A at the end, wasn't there? Yeah.
Yeah.
You can only say so much in that time, I know. But I think as well, with all that's going on in the world, and, you know, I'm not here to talk about the free school meal thing. But with all that's going on in the world, it just landed at the wrong time, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It sort of taps into that target of social workers who are easy targets. You know, if you want to get into that. Shall I read out a few things that I think the points that were a little bit pertinent. And I've asked permission for the people who emailed me if they would happy for me to read the stuff out. So I've got a bit of, I'm going to have to practice my public reading today. So I apologise if I'm all tongue-tied. So the Education Secretary said, too many lifestyle judgments, and that's quotation marks, are made on potential adopters, with the consequences that there are not enough adoptive parents to go around. the shortfall is resulting in children being bounced around the system. And then he goes on, and he does make some good points in relation to safeguarding. You know, safeguarding checks must not be relaxed. Checks must remain in place. Mm-hmm. Given black and ethnic minority children will wait the longest to be adopted, he also warned that we must end this obsession, which is kind of really important language, with finding the perfect ethnic match for children, mm-hmm. stating there is no acceptable reason why adopters should be blocked from registering simply because there are no children of the same ethnicity waiting. I think my microphone technique was very poor there because I talked and then I brought my... But anyway, don't worry about my microphone technique.
I heard you.
That's good. So what have people been saying to you? What's your thoughts on that? What's the word on the street?
Well, nobody speaks to me, so, you know, I'm kind of living in my little bubble over here, aren't I?
I'm sure the dog speaks to you.
I just read what I read. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's about the only one in the house that does. I only read what I read, and like you, you know, you kind of you have emails from those that matter, which is important.
What my wife?
I think it just landed all wrong, and I think that you know, there was. I'm not sure. Was the word snobbery used? Was that a word that he used, or was that just kind of the translation that everybody?
Well, that's
took
interesting,
from what
isn't
he
it?
Said.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
Because I think that's the biggest thing that I kind of took from it was this kind of the snobbery of it. Because I don't think that way, but I'm sure there are some that, you know, and I have read a few comments on Twitter saying, yes, that's exactly how we felt. We felt that, you know, we weren't good enough for the local authority and da 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 da, or the agency, should I say.
Yeah, well, he did say snobbery. So, yeah, he said, when it comes to adoption, we've seen over a number of years, it is something I can only call narrow-mindedness or even snobbery. Making it harder to adopt if you don't rent rather than own your own home or if you're not a perfect ethnic match.
And I think that, you know, if we look back 10, 12, 15 years ago, if you didn't own your own home, it probably was a kind of barrier in some ways for fear of having to move. How secure is your tenancy? I remember all these kind of questions of people who didn't own their own home back then. But is that not something that, you know,
due diligence? Is that not
exactly
what it is?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can kind of balance that up on both sides, really, can you?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I don't. It's a bit like, I don't know what I'm trying to say now. It's a bit like kind of going into it and saying, well, is it not the same as what is your reasoning to become a parent? You know, so it's not, I know it's not exactly the same, but, you know, is it because you've had failed IVF attempts and this is your last opportunity to become a parent kind of thing? Or is this your first choice because actually this is what you've wanted to do, or, you know, you've brought up your own children and now you want to adopt because you want to make a difference and stuff like that. So I guess, you know, it's kind of that intention of the reasons for expressing interest in adoption, that could be classed as in the same way. There's a rate on, you know, nowadays it would be, well, you know, we've tried everything and we just want to have our own little baby kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's less and less common these days, I know that, but, you know, they would be kind of that sort of prospective adopter would be kind of quite low down the list until they've gone through the training and stuff like that. So in terms of snobbery, I guess you could relate it to each of those kind of sections in, I don't know. It was
the tone, really, because I think that you don't necessarily have to unpick that. I'm going to read from you the next, the saga continued. So the Association of Director of Children's Services then weighed
in. Yes, it did. I remember. Seems so long ago.
Literally days and days ago. And I guess they're quite measured normally in their responses. I'll pull out this bit. And they say quite categorically, we cannot be complacent when it comes to making what are complex and life-changing decisions on behalf of the children in our care. Therefore, it is right that there is a rigorous and thorough assessment and approval process for adoption, one that ensures vulnerable children don't face further trauma and loss. And if an ethnic match with a potential adoption is considered to be the right thing for a child, then it should be pursued. That feels like a real, I mean, that's nice words, but that's a real, like...
Yeah.
What? But, yeah. So that was interesting. And now, shall I read out the email that I got, the message that I got from a practitioner?
Because people want to hear what other people think. They don't want to hear what we think. Oh, blimey.
I don't know. Well, my children have no interest. Apart from, can I tell you that Lottie is become slightly obsessed with becoming a social worker because I told her how much I got paid. And to her, it's a king's ransom or a queen's ransom or a, I don't know, whatever. It's a royal ransom.
Oh, bless her. Oh, she'll be turfing the whole of Northumbria.
Oh, honestly, she will literally go through the local community like a scythe.
Breaking, oh, bless her.
Yeah, pulling down bridges.
But what it is to be nine and not have a clue how much money really is, eh? Oh, I remember those days.
Yes, deep joy.
Actually, to be fair, you don't have to be nine. You can be 22, 21, 14.
Oh, it is a king's ransom. So this is from a social worker. So this is a practicing social worker, and they got on to me and they said, I'm going to start at the beginning because it got a bit complicated because we started to talk to each other about different things. Hi, I felt compelled to write after listening to your most recent podcast with Sir Armstrong Brown. As an adoption social worker, Gavin Williamson's speech has left me feeling rather deflated. It often feels like social workers don't have a voice and we can't really talk about our work, and there seems to be no way of responding to political blame shifting like this. We are also quite frightened to put our heads above the parapet. It's been a very difficult year for everyone, and as a team we've tried really hard to support our families as best we can and adapt to a virtual working, all the while facing our own personal struggles due to lockdown. Timescale expectations have not changed. I think this is one of the reasons I found the speech more dispiriting than I would have usually. Anyway, we'll see what they plan to do. So then it went on. I don't want to be modest, but then went on and said, you know, oh, thank you so much for doing it, and brilliant podcast, and Al, you're great, you know, stuff like that. We're both great. But I think there were some really interesting points because you know lots of practitioners because you're a member of an adoption panel, so you rub shoulders with people all the time.
Do you know what I just got from that email as well? You might share who it was from there, just in case, because you know I might own them. But the one thing that actually I think people do forget is how social workers were affected during lockdown, because actually they were in lockdown as well. So whilst they were trying to support families, they were also kind of navigating and traversing kind of lockdown. One of the things that I pulled out of that, because actually I think we take for granted that they should still be there.
Well, can I read you what else she wrote back, and just kind of, I said, well, I'm gonna, if it's okay if I put it out, and she went, yeah, and she sort of reflected on that. She said, lockdown has been hard for us all, but I'm so proud of how my colleagues have rallied, keeping the service going despite of personal challenges. This has included additional care responsibilities and no childcare. The irony of writing out people's parenting skills while sticking my own kids in front of CBeebies is not lost on me. We have also had to adopt to clunky virtual systems, wonky Wi-Fi, COVID procedures, increased workloads, and I'm proud of the additional support my agency has given. And that's exactly the point, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And I think that is the point, isn't it? You know, we take for granted actually these people are always there, or, you know, some people would argue they're not there, no offence, but, you know, some people do kind of have issues with support from agencies. But actually, when, you know, that sums up for me, really, you know, and that should have been the message. The message should have been about how amazing social workers or agencies have been this year, rather than kind of focusing in on the negative. Because right now that's irrelevant. You know, we should all be in this kind of working through it together, and that's kind of, yeah, it's created a bit of a divide, hasn't it, between the DfE and the kind of agencies that are trying their best with the budgets that they've got. You know, the majority of them are still working from home. They're still kind of balancing childcare if they've got younger kids or kids that aren't in school. And, you know, let's face it as well. I don't know about you, but I know a lot of social workers who are also adoptive parents, and that's why they become social workers in the same way, you know,
you're
a social worker as a result of your family life.
It's not uncommon.
And it's, you know, they have their family issues as well. So.
All kinds of interesting stuff going on.
Exactly, yeah.
We've had the occasional police visit round Coates Towers, I'll be honest, which is a fun day out at the farm.
I was going to say something there, but I'm not going
to. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. It feels odd because you, in some ways, you become really numb to it. And I'm conscious that for some people, that's like an extreme event in their lives. And for us, it was just like a, we'll call the police. Yeah. We ain't going to mess around here. Yeah. Not a glib number way, but actually that is just the reality of some people's lives. You know, I know you've had moments.
Yeah, we've had police. Yeah, we've had international police at our house.
International police.
Yeah. Well, I say that because we live in a different country. So to you, it's international.
You see, Interpol turned up. That's like some extreme.
They're not even called police here. They're called something else. Did you not know?
The Garda. Anyway, I don't know.
The guards. Yeah, the guards. Or the Gardaí, or whatever you want to go. Anyway, but my point is that, like, you know, the kind of, rolling of the eyes, you know, face palm, all that sort of stuff. It's a wrong message at exactly the wrong time. And, you know, we know it was within National Adoption Week, which it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was at the beginning. And also, he's not, I know, I don't wish to will any harm on him, but he's not that known in terms of, you know, some of the previous. Some of his predecessors.
It's odd because he's the Secretary of State for Education as opposed to Vicky Ford, who's the children's.
No, she was. Is she still?
Yeah, she is.
Oh, no, she's on mat leave.
That was the previous one.
Oh, I can't keep up, Al. Honestly.
Right. You keep talking. I'm going to Google it.
Okay, well, you Google it. But anyway, my point is, he's not as highly known as some of his predecessors. And I know that kind of obviously they took away the kind of children's minister post, didn't they, when Mr. Ed lost his seat a few years back, because he kind of was he was the face of the kind of DfE at that point.
Yeah, it's a bit of a word salad, but it looks like she is. It's a bit of a... Vicky Ford was appointed a parliamentary Undersecretary of State for Children and Families at the Department for Education on the 14th of February this year. Yeah.
Okay.
It seems odd that she wasn't...
The person that they would have, you know, because actually she has, and I know that Gavin Williamson has personal experience of, is it fostering or adoption? I can't remember which. He's got one of them, isn't he?
That's the word on the street.
Yeah, but with Vicky Ford, she has that...
That's her job.
Yeah. And that would have been better. Anyway.
No. It is interesting times because I do know that from all the kind of the chit-chat I've seen and the stats that were released, I think they were released, if you look on the Coram Bath website, they're released, and they said that actually applications are up as well. So in that context, a lot of people obviously sat at home thinking, oh, what should we do in lockdown? Or it's given people a moment of pause. Yeah, well, it's maybe been a confluence of lots of different things, hasn't it? But applications are up. So actually the system's stressed because there's lots of people. I was looking on, I'm part of I think I've mentioned this repeatedly, because I'm repeatedly quite surprised by it.
If it makes you feel important, you've probably said it a few times. Go on.
Well, I will. If it's good, I'll misuse anything as long as it's good. So seeing that people are having to wait till February, like waiting for a prep group till February, that people are kind of told, oh, you're in a queue really to, you know, you're in a queue to get onto stage one, you're in a queue to get to stage two. So the system's stressed, but it's not universally stressed. We know that there are some parts of the system that are not at capacity, other parts that are just run ragged.
And you would have thought as well, given that most of it is remote at the minute and virtual, that actually it would be faster because, you know, social workers don't have travel time to contend with, you know, they're kind of they're not having to go from visit to visit to appointment to appointment. So, you know, but equally you need that break between the Zoom meetings because otherwise you're just, yeah. And you know, I've found it interesting as well because we're doing the agency that I sit on their adoption panel for, we're doing more panels as a result of doing them remotely than we would have done had we been doing them face to face.
Is that because you've got more stuff to get through? You've got more work.
No, it's not. I mean, we it's a very specialist agency because they deal with high level kind of placements in terms of, you know, kind of the needs of some of the children. What you would class as fingers in the air, harder to place children. And when we're talking harder to place, we're talking, you know, very hard to place. So they maybe only have maybe two or three families come through every year, because that's not their prime focus as an agency. That they're not just family finding. But we've had three panels, or we will have had three panels by the end of November, starting from August, I think. So, which is a lot, because it would normally be every 6 months, and it maybe would be one family, or maybe. If they were pushed to do two, they would do two. So that in itself, you know, I guess it depends on the size of the agency as well. You know, if you're a massive local authority that has limited kind of practitioners, that may be a big struggle, especially if people, like you say, I said earlier, you know, Wi-Fi issues, connectivity, you know, maybe people who are not that great with technology, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, with the smaller agencies, they're potentially going to be having more families come through.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done a Form F. I've done a lot of Form F assessments, which are the fostering equivalent, and I know that the numbers of them are up. But I have also done one adoption assessment. It's not particularly it's not an area I want to particularly work in. But what I do know is that, I think doing one is very different to having one done to you. Oh, clearly is. This actually, that they're really complex documents to get right, to do well. Mm-hmm. And as a practitioner, I know I sort of tend to spend a lot of time pondering where I'm going with it and what I'm unpicking. And I was having a conversation. It sounds like I've had loads of conversations. Well, the reality is that I have had loads of conversations about adoption with professionals, because we've been part of this kind of 3-year strategy thing, haven't we, Scott? Can we confess to that?
I think we can.
Well, we've said it now.
We have. Yeah, well, you've said it. I'm not getting the blame for it.
So that's
blimey, Governor.
God blimey, Governor. So there's different strands that are looking at different aspects of recruitment and getting people into adoption and stuff. And it's been I found it really fascinating to kind of see the mechanics of how the system works. And we're not there in any of the role as kind of adopters with experience.
Yeah.
I know you've got. You're doing a bit in a different corner of that. And we were talking about the recruitment process, and we were talking about this idea of, you know, disguised compliance in prospective adoptive parents, which is this fascinating idea, is that what are you going to tell your social worker? You know, if your social worker says, you know, tell me about your attitudes to diversity, you're not going to say, oh, well, actually, I'm a raving racist.
Well, you know, this is the thing. This is exactly the thing. You will be surprised as well, right? Let me tell you about an email that I got the other day. Okay. It was from... I'm not sure I should say who it's from.
Tell me what it is, then we'll say it, and I'll tell you whether you can or not.
It's from a charity, and it said, oh God, I can't even remember the title of the email, but it kind of made me giggle because I did have a quick look at it, and it was all about, it's an LGBTQ+ organisation charity, and they were asking about... monogamy in gay relationships when you've got kids. I can see by your face how you're like, what? And it actually went through all these questions, because I went through it just to see what the questions were, because I was really intrigued by this kind of fascination, because it started off saying, were you honest with your social worker when you went through an assessment process for adoption? Or, you know, did you tell your female kind of, what they called, the mother for, and you know, when you have, you know, the turkey baster job and all that sort of stuff.
Whoa. Hang on. I mean, I thought you were just not very good with your words, but then I realised you were finding a delicate way of saying something rude.
Yeah, turkey baster.
Rude boy.
But this is the thing as well, because, you know, I know what you've just said there, it just kind of made me think, are we that honest? I don't think we can be. I think, you know, that some people are really wary of being honest. I think that, you know, social workers have a massive job to unpick and are never, ever going to get to the bottom of everybody's life. The one thing that obviously always worries anybody who is of any kind of human being without trying, would be someone who's, you know, got issues with young children, if that makes sense. I don't want to say the word out loud because I don't like it. It's a horrible word. But, you know, if someone was
predatory. Well, let's say predatory.
Those, yeah. But actually, you know, I'm thinking in terms of, just how much do you share? How much do you tell them? How much do you worry about what they might think? You know, like there's polygamists and there's, you know, transgendered people and there's gay people and stuff. And we've, you know, gay people have come through a journey and hoping that transgendered people have as well in terms of being able to become parents. But, you know, will it come to a point where, you know, I'm sure it's happening now actually with people who put themselves in the non-binary, what's the word? I don't even know what the word is actually for that. Who
designate who, as
non-binary. Yes, that's what they what's it called? Identify as non-binary. Yeah. So how is that working? You know, or are people too wary to say, actually, I don't see myself as male or female. I see myself as, you know, sorry, I don't know the correct vernacular for that discussion, and I do apologize. Maybe that's.
But the minute you sort of, the minute you step off that straight line of what society expects,
what's normal, or what you, you know, what you saw from your parents' marriage, or you know, all that sort of stuff. It's kind of because that's you know, I as life goes on, and you know, as you know, having been in a relationship for 23 years, I can safely say that my relationship with my husband is nothing like my mum and dad's relationship, because actually I wouldn't have wanted it to be like that.
Yeah.
And secondly, life isn't as sweet and roses and, you know, all lovely as my parents' marriage appeared to have been, if that makes sense. Yeah. So
that's really interesting, because I think that, I mean, as a social worker, my views are that I need to know what your parents' parenting was like. And the reason I need to know that is because it's, good or bad, it's kind of the start point of what you will do. It might be that you'll look at your parents and you'll go, oh, I'll never be like that. There's nothing about that I want to be like. Fine.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Or it might be that you go, actually, there was some good stuff and I'm going to pull out the good stuff and I'm going to leave the rubbish stuff. Or you might just go, I've never even thought about it. I'm just going to be like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what's fascinating doing Form F, I mean, I would imagine it's comparative and doing a perspective doctor report, is that that people are not necessarily that self-aware. The people don't necessarily know themselves that much. And you create an environment where for the first time in their lives, you sit down and you'll give them 8, 10, 12, 14 hours and you'll say, talk about yourself. And people don't know what to do, you know, like, because it's not normal.
Well, I managed it no problem when I did it. I was just yeah.
And then
no problem.
And then and he said and I said
and they still let us become parents, so it couldn't be that bad. But
but some people really hate
majority,
it.
Majority.
Yeah, and I supervise people doing Form Fs as well. And sometimes the social workers come back to me and they go, I just it's like getting blood out of stone. It's not that people are closed or people. So when you look at, you know, you're familiar with attachment, aren't you? So avoidant attachment, which you're familiar with, you know, this idea that people kind of internalize stuff and kind of are stoic and hold themselves. But in adulthood, that can kind of reframe or kind of shift into this adults who idealize their own childhood, that they kind of, or they idealize people who have not necessarily been particularly nice to them, that they lose parts of their childhood. So there's gaps in their childhood. Not that they've forgotten or put them in, you know, they're not so horrific that they've hidden them away. But what you then you say to people who are perhaps in that model, and you go, oh, tell me about a childhood. And they go, oh, that was great. And you go, well, tell me some stuff. Mm-hmm. And they go, I can't. And so you, as a practitioner, you've got to kind of like really work with people to kind of help them understand what stuff is going on. And I've had moments where people have started thinking the childhood was one thing. By the time we got to the end of it, they've gone, oh, it wasn't the childhood I thought it was it? And I went, no. From what you've said, no.
I have to say that was exactly my experience of that, because I went into it thinking that my childhood was great and there was going to be... I'd say probably 90% of my parenting was going to be the way my mom and dad did it.
Yeah.
And I came out of it going, okay, my childhood wasn't as idealistic as I thought it was. And I'm probably going to do 40%, maybe 30%. I think I've probably gone back to 90%, 52%.
under stress, we reversed.
But I think is that not like the way, you know, that's kind of, it's part of your DNA, isn't it, as well, you know, because you were parented by you were parented by your parents, who were parented by their parents, so it kind of comes down that line. There's stuff that you don't do, you know, as an example, you know, I can say it because they're both dead, my dad's dad had favorites, and I wasn't one of those favorites, and I always swore that if anybody did that to my child, I'd be having them, and I'm very much like that because I just don't have it. But then there's other stuff like, you know, my mum and dad refused to talk to me and teach me about sex and sexual education and, you know, biology and, you know, the fact that there was kind of, you know, I mean, bearing in mind it was '80s, so, you know, like being gay wasn't really kind of high up on the parents' list of wishes in terms of what they wanted for the child. But I always swore that I would never be like that with my child either. So, you know, why are you laughing now? Because it's true. It was '80s, you know, everybody just assumed.
That's what I'm laughing at. I'm sure it was the '70s, Scott. I'm sure it was the '70s.
No, it wasn't. It was the '80s and '90s. Thanking you.
Cheeky gift. No, but I think it's fascinating. I think that people, I think as you're stood looking on to an assessment, you see it as quite a rudimentary, kind of basic stuff. But actually, if it's done well, it really needs to get to the bottom of this stuff. And you could, so, you know, there's the 3 months for the hang on, how many months is it? You got the stage one, you got the stage two, but it's 6 months in total.
6 months total.
For some people, that's just nowhere near enough. And social workers have got to have that flexibility, you know, because, I mean, I've been in situations where people have read their Form F and they've wept because they just hadn't seen it that way.
And people are, that's the other thing, shocked. Because, you know, talking about taking out all the, you know, the ADCS response was really in relation to the timescales and all that sort of stuff. The timescales do not need changing. I'm sorry, that's just, you know, whoa. 6 months is far too quick in my eyes, and this is just my personal opinion. It's way too quick. You know, you can have a child who's experienced trauma, neglect, abuse, all that sort of stuff, faster than you can have a biological child. That's just not. No, I'm sorry. That's just. I never agreed with the 6 months when it did the 6 months anyway. I still say it should be 12 months, but that's just my opinion.
But I do think that there's always that. I think in some ways it's about running scared of running out of adopters, and that's a palpable and tangible. It's a legitimate concern. But at what cost? Are we going to make it so easy at what cost? Because it's a nonsense.
I have a question for you, Mr. Coates.
Oh,
sorry.
Go for it.
Normally when we do a podcast, right, it says recording at the top of the screen.
Well, don't worry, because it's recording on a different, different thing.
I just had this vision that we've just done. Oh, it's not recorded, which has happened before.
Having a flashback. The lost episode.
Sorry, I didn't mean to distract you, but I thought before we say any more, maybe you should just check with you. Press the record button.
I can't feel my legs. That would be horrendous. That would be horrendous. I do think it's interesting, and I was going to pull out something from the National Minimum Standards, because I'm on a real kind of a policy wonk roll at the moment. And I think that people are not that familiar with these, which I find really odd. Adopters are normally so diligent. But if you go to the National Minimum Standards 2011, I believe
scrolling through them now as we speak.
Standard 10 talks about things. And one of the things it says is that people who are interested in becoming adoptive parents and prospective adopters are treated fairly, without prejudice, openly and with respect. They're kept informed on a regular basis on the progress or lack of progress of their inquiry and application throughout the process. in a manner that meets their individual communication needs. They are given regular opportunities to raise specific concerns or questions, which are then answered as directly and full as possible. And you go, what's to complain about that? What? Tell me what you could change about that. It's great. Well,
but it's not about, it's again, it's perception, isn't it? Because if you look at that last bit, they are given regular opportunities to raise any specific concerns or questions, which are then answered as directly and fully as possible. If you had an issue when you're going through the assessment process, would you?
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
And you know, it's nice to have that as kind of a standard, but actually, how out of 10 prospective people coming through, how many would actually do that? Because I know that back then I wouldn't have done. Tris would have done. I wouldn't have done, because I would have just thought, well, I don't want to damage kind of the work. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's part of the issue. It's all very well having that in there. Actually, how many people are going to kind of go, yeah, okay, well, I need to say this, I need to do this, blah, blah, blah. In the same way, you know, we talked about contact many times on the podcast. How many parents, by the time they're approved and then they're linked and then they've done intros and blah, blah, feel brave enough to challenge a social worker in terms of the proposed contact. I'm not talking about, like, you know, just letterbox and maybe one director every 12 months. I'm talking about, you know, more than that. You know, if it feels right and, you know, that's what, you know, you wouldn't, would you?
No, the power dynamics are set so against adoptive parents. And I, from the, you know, the groups I see that, and the comments I see is people are just, totally, that they've invested everything. And for some people, it's the last roll of the dice.
Yeah, exactly.
For like yourself and for ourselves to an extent, because we didn't know if we were infertile or not that when we initially applied. It wasn't that kind of like everything else is exhausted. No. If this doesn't work, we're not going to get children. So
yeah,
that must be scary. And what I see that reflecting is that, you know, flippant throwaway comments for social workers, you know, is adoptive parents or prospective adoptive parents then hang on those for a week or 2 weeks, you know, like they didn't like the biscuits, or, you know, I see lots of people stressing over things like, you know, the issues in their houses. The white glove.
They think the social worker is going to come around with a white glove and check their skirting boards. They probably do, but only when you've nipped to the loo, you know, they're not actually going to do it. I'm joking, of course. No. But then you do have, you know, I mean, I've seen some comments posted on replies to some of the stuff that happened over National Adoption Week. And one that stuck in my head, because I was thinking, oh, seriously. And it said, because I didn't have a spare room, I wasn't taken any further. And then once the conversation kind of went on a little bit, it was because she was expecting a child who was going to be placed with them to share the room with their 14-year-old or 15-year-old son. And that's the kind of thing that actually, that's not going to happen, I'm afraid. So you can't criticize a process, because actually, number one, you know, a child who's been through what they've been through needs the ability to have their own space, to have their own time, to have their own, you know, whatever it is. But also, why would you, both sides, you know, why would you put your 15-year-old in that position to have to share a room with a child that they don't know? You know, what is it, babysitting? You know, it's that kind of thing. It's just, it's kind of, so I feel that when people come out with stuff like that, actually, they're being quite critical of a system that is trying to look after the best needs of a child who's placed for adoption and not their needs, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, and there are people who have, you know, that are just not up to it. Let's be honest, because we're not looking at normal parenting as well. You know, how people feel about adoption day one is not very different to how they feel at year five. And you know, the needs of those needs of a lot of the children, you know, the adoption barometer really highlighted that there's a higher prevalence of adversity and challenge in that parenting. So And you also, you know, again, people counter and go, well, it takes 9 months to have a baby and then you get a baby. Yeah, but babies are fairly, I mean, babies are hard work.
Yeah, of course. So.
But they're not, but compared to a 3-year-old who's going to share with you their opinions of your parenting.
Yeah.
It's a very, very different kettle of fish, you know. Yes. I say, father, I disagree with your bedtime routine, they'll say to you.
Yes, exactly.
You bounder.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I was going to say something else. What was it?
Was it good?
It was good as well. And you've picked me off, look.
Oh, bless your heart. Do you want to move on to your cunning idea for our conference competition? Because I think have we done that to death?
I don't think we have. And I'll tell you why we haven't.
Right? All right, okay.
Because what I think is interesting about this is, because we've yacked on, people will have switched off. So nobody might win any places.
No, there's some hardcore who walk the dog and they twiddle their thumbs.
Oh, yeah. More like glitter nails. Anyway. Yes, so glitter nails. Bless her. So obviously the conference is 20th of November, and we're now getting into the final phases of it in terms of, I know it's 27th of October when we are recording this, but that's only 3 weeks away.
Money has been paid to the webinar hosting services.
Please don't say about money being paid, because, yeah. Anyway, so in my kind of... I mean, let's face it. So you're not thinking about all the technical side. I've been doing all the kind of admin-y, getting all the bookings in, talking with regional adoption agencies, which, to be fair, we mentioned them. Was it last week we mentioned them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was last week, wasn't it? We've had no more come forward. So shame on the rest of you. That's all I'm going to say. We'll name and shame you in public at some point in the future, I'm sure. But the ones that have, so the 10 that have, you can expect to have your name up in lights on the day, with all the kind of flash stuff that we're going to be doing. You can tell I don't know. And yeah. See, this is the thing, right? This is what I'm used to. I'm used to going and actually delivering a conference and being like
jazz hands.
La, 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 la. Yeah, jazz hands. So that's not happening. So we're doing it online. But anyway, but the point is, so we're getting near to capacity now. So if you haven't got your ticket, you best get it. Now we are, if you're listening to this podcast,
when we get to 14 people, we're cutting it off.
Yeah, exactly. But a bit of an exclusive as well. So we are going to extend. We're going to extend the early bird by a couple of days.
Yeah.
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 But don't tell anybody. Actually, tell everybody so that they'll go and get it.
I see what
it is. Yeah. It's only going to be a couple of days. However, for the first 5 people who are listening to this now, who DM us on our Twitter.
Yep, Twitter.
Yeah, on the Twitter machine, you can actually win a ticket. Whee! So we've got 5 free tickets to give away, and that is a way you can win. So if you are on Twitter, if you're not on Twitter, then you're a bit knackered. You better join.
Good point. So maybe
we'll do it on an email. No, let's do an email. We'll do an email, because then I'll see them. If you do that on the Twitter machine, I'll never see them.
Right, imagine that we're not making this up as we go.
Well, we kind of are anyway, it was always going to be a bit bad.
And so what's the email address?
So the email address, so for the first 5 people, and in the subject line you have to put, I'm a winner, baby. Aha, do you like that? That's good, isn't it?
I'm a winner, so, baby. I'm a winner,
baby. Yeah, listen to us like we're running some high-level national radio program here that would be on Slick. On a Monday morning Slick. At 1 a.m. So I'm a winner, baby, in the subject line, and then your name and a message of some form.
Yeah,
which we'll get anyway, because seriously, after doing all these bookings, the number of people that have different names to their email name is just untrue. So you need to tell us your name. Anyway, so I'm a winner, baby, and the first 5 to email it to now I'm going to spell it out so that everybody knows. So it's A and F, so that's AANDF podcast @gmail.com.
And it's in the blurb as well. I'll put the email address in the blurb.
Yeah, but don't tell them why you put an email address in it.
No, would never do that.
Because if you do that, then people don't have to.
That'll give it away.
But yes, and it will be the first five. And if you haven't, if you're not a winner, we'll let you know, so you can buy a ticket.
That's fair enough.
But we do have five, and we will announce five winners. We'll do it on the pseudonyms or whatever you want to do. But we will let people know that five people have won as well.
Well, I think that was absolute podcast gold, that last.
That was, wasn't it? It was like five minutes of sheer gold. Honestly, we should be winning awards for this.
We should be winning awards. Right. So, clearly, we're living in some sort of post-apocalyptic doom-laden world. The clock's went back, and I thought I was going to have to put myself on. I've told the children to hide the sharp things because I can't bear it.
Have you got a lamp? You should have one of them LED lamps because this happens every year with you.
I know. I did. Someone did give me one, but I felt soft using it. That's so stupid.
See, after all your therapy, you'll be getting out of the wardrobe or what? Attic or something.
I think my therapist's forgotten about me. He owes me two sessions, and I've just he's not.
maybe he's run away. That's more likely. He's gone. No, sod that. Right, okay, where's my new SIM? Where's my other SIM card?
He's turned the lights off in the office and just hiding
behind
his
number. He's changed his number.
Oh, well, that never dawned on me till you just said it.
Well, I keep trying, but you keep finding me because you keep messaging my husband saying, what's his new number? well, listen, things could be worse because I know that there's lots of localised... That was the other thing I was going to say about the conference as well, actually, because there's this tier system in the UK. Now, we've got a different tier system here. We've got five tiers.
Just showing
right
off.
Now, the whole of Ireland is in level five, all right. Which is the worst, which means that we're all in lockdown, basically, again. For the next 6 weeks, although schools are still open, so we're back in lockdown. But schools, anyway, that aside. But I was thinking the conference might be a good way for anybody who is a bit suspicious about what tier they're going to be in by the 20th of November. So if you're going to be in, if you're in tier two at the minute, or you think you might be going in tier three, then you know what? Don't cut yourself off. £15, it's nothing.
It's all available online afterwards. You can either watch it or you can download it as audio files. So that's there you go.
It's going to be amazing, actually. Now that you've sorted out your technical brain, Coatsy, I'm well impressed with you. Well done, you.
Oh, I tell you, there's been levers pulled, yoghurt pots, string. I tell you, we're on it down here in the bleak north.
And, you know, I've got my Excel spreadsheet. What could go wrong?
What could possibly go
wrong?
With formulas.
I was explaining to Al earlier that I'm doing an Excel spreadsheet for it all. I've got all the delegates. I've got the numbers. I've got the names. I've got the email addresses, the whole jing bang. And he said, and I said, in a formula that works out all the totals and blah, blah. He went, do you use formulas on an Excel spreadsheet? I was like, seriously? That is the whole fun of an Excel spreadsheet, working out formulas.
You're a genuine...
I need to get life.
You surprise me every time I talk to you, generally. Well, I'm going to go off and it's past my bedtime, so I'm going to go off and do something much more interesting. No, that's not true. I'm going to go to bed. And I'm just going to go to bed and go to sleep. Simple as that. That's it. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I don't know, because every day is the same. What day is it, actually? I don't even know what day it is.
It's... Wednesday, Saturday.
Okay, that's fine then. Yeah.
Every day. Is
I don't know. Day? I don't know. We're half term here this week. I don't know what day it is. I don't care what day it is. Tomorrow will be another day of applying for jobs and, you know,
not getting
hoovering and dusting. Yeah, and, you know, not even getting responses. I did have a bit of a rant on LinkedIn about that.
Oh, I'm going to go and have a look. All right. That's something to do afterwards. Excellent.
Please don't, because I'm quite embarrassed by it now I've said it. But, it just needs to be said. I'm so fed up. Like, employers, if you are going to try and recruit, please have the decency, if someone is applying, to at least acknowledge them, even if it's just a standard, you know, because, yeah.
I get you. It costs you nothing to be polite.
It's not good. No, it doesn't. Yeah. No. I know some jobs get like hundreds of responses and that's fine, but you know what? If you can have a copy and paste, Just do it.
Well,
please.
That could be your job, couldn't it? Your job could be
well, exactly. Yes, I could do that because I'm really good at copying and pasting.
Boom. There you are. That's what you need to market yourself as. I'm very good at rejecting people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Because I'm one of the rejectees. And on that note.
Yeah, on that note.
Well, I think we should leave that.
Yes, well, have a fantastic week and I shall speak to you soon. Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.
Hello and welcome to what is the 106th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. A spelk. Oh, so silly boy. A spelk. I'm going to get out. A spelk in the thumb of adoption. No. A spelk.
A scalf.
No, a spelk.
No, a scalf.
All right, okay. I'll try again.